What's up, guys? This is your host, SB Sanchez, and we're back again at the Mentally Entangled podcast. I'm actually going to do something that most podcasters don't do, and that's admit that this is actually my second round of this same episode. So the guest that I have today is a very special one to me, somebody that I admire a lot for the work that she does, but also just some of the things that she's overcome within her own life experiences. But it's a tough conversation. It's not an easy one. And we attempted to have it a couple weeks ago, but it didn't go over as smoothly as we wanted to. This is going to be one of her very first times being able to really express her passion, how she got to where she is today, and all the things that she had to overcome in order to get here. So telling her story was not easy. And we realized that very quickly, but she actually took a step back and did some reflecting and some journaling and was able to take some time to really lay out her story and understand why it's so important to her and the message that she would like to send to all of you listeners today as well. And I think we're ready. I think today's going to be a solid episode full of some really raw material that is going to be really helpful for a lot of people, because this conversation is going to be full of a common challenge, one that a lot of people actually have to overcome more than we think. So Lauren, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much, SB. It's a pleasure having me back in the podcast.
I'm very excited. I'm excited for us to be able to do this again, because, you know, first time, like, I know your story is so full of just like such good content, things that people really will benefit so much from hearing. But the first time, it's like we were just hitting this wall and this barrier and we were not able to get through it. Yeah. So I'm excited to hear just you kind of unfold it today. So you ready?
I feel like it's my duty to. I feel like that I have to share this because I'm finally just coming out of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just going to help so many people, especially young girls.
Why is it so important for you, like for yourself? Why is this an important step for you?
I feel like that I can finally enjoy life and have experiences and not be afraid of food.
Yeah, this is a big one. So for all the listeners, that is going to be the topic today. I guess I really didn't do a good job of introducing the genre. But yeah, we're going to be talking about food. We're going to be talking about eating disorders. We're going to be hitting on nutrition and diet a little bit, just kind of a full package deal because of your experience, your education, and, you know, the things that you've been through in your own life. But if you, before we head into your story, if you had to relay one message, like if you want the listeners to take away a message from today's episode, what would you want it to be?
I would say that food is very nourishing for the body. That is a privilege that we should not take it for granted, that we need to treat our bodies like we love them.
Mm-hmm.
And that we should just enjoy every single moment and just not be afraid of food, enjoy different tastes. So that's what I believe.
Yeah, I'm actually going to quote you. Before we agreed to sit down a couple weeks ago, I had asked you what was your number one message that you would want to share with the world. And the one of the sentences that you included in the email that you sent me, it said, "I don't want people to demonize food, and I want them to learn to eat in moderation. That's how we find a healthy relationship with food." And I felt like that was so powerful. You used some really key words there, which is like moderation and healthy relationship.
Yes.
So many people have a hard time finding that balance. And it is hard. It's hard to, you know, be like, okay, well, I want to eat this because I really enjoy it. But then there's also the backlash of like, okay, just because I like McDonald's chicken nuggets doesn't mean that I should have them all the time either, right? So, like I said, I'm really excited to just get into your story today. I do still need you to answer the original question of the podcast. If you had to define mental health, how would you define it?
I would say that mental health is like a spectrum. There's different feelings like anxiety, sadness, happiness. I don't think that we're supposed to feel one. It's not normal to be happy all the time. It's not normal to be sad all the time or anxious. I think it's normal to feel those feelings and just learn to accept them.
Yeah, and we need to do better at normalizing them. I feel like we have this I guess we kind of separate emotions. We separate emotions into like, quote unquote, good emotions and bad emotions. But for some reason, if we admit to having a bad emotion, people automatically assume the worst. Yeah. And it's like, no, like life is hard. Life is really hard. So if I feel mad or upset about something, that doesn't mean something's wrong with me. It just means life is hard.
Exactly. So, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for just answering that right off the bat. I really just want to hand it over to you. Now, you have had your own experiences with an eating disorder.
Yes. I never got diagnosed. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't like to self-diagnose myself. I have a feeling of what I have. Mm-hmm. But what I know is that is disordered eating and that it's not normal. And the reason why I know this is I went through school for nutrition. I'm currently at an eating disorder clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm starting to recognize some different habits from the clients.
Yeah. I think it's really powerful that in a way you weren't diagnosed. Like you didn't have somebody else say like, hey, Lauren, this is wrong with you. You kind of had to, in a way, discover that on your own. Which
it was
means,
self-realization.
Yeah. You had to be so aware and do so much reflection probably to find that out. So that's pretty powerful in itself. So just take us through it. When did this start?
So very crazy. I would say this started ever since I was born. And the reason for that is I was born a few weeks early. I'm an only child. My parents struggled to have me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had different things. My colon, they had to reconstruct. It was not functioning properly. And luckily, they did fix it. And without that, then I wouldn't be alive today.
Wow.
So I had surgery and they put me on laxatives and they said that I would have to take that for the rest of my life. And so up until 3 years old, I didn't know this until very recently,
mm-hmm.
but I developed a food aversion. And so what that is it's something that causes you not to eat for whatever reason. And I believe that reason was because I just wasn't feeling good.
Mm. Thank you for defining that, by the way. Because we're not all as smart as you.
It's so confusing.
No, it is. There's so many terms.
But that's what it was. I just was not myself. I wasn't feeling good.
And you were little.
And like, I was little.
How old are you at this point?
I was 3.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yes. And so they put me on Miralax. And so very disgusting details, I know, but this is the reality.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make me feel good. It made me feel very full inside. It made me feel sick. And I didn't want to take it. I didn't want to eat because of it. And so this kind of happened throughout the years. Throughout my early childhood, I just didn't feel good at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to many doctors. I can't remember what the diagnosis was for my colon, but it just doesn't function properly without it.
Okay.
So up until age 13, teenage years are very, very hard.
Naturally, yeah.
Naturally.
Without the extra stuff. And now you're telling me you had a lot of extra stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. And being a girl is hard. Very hard.
Yes, it is.
I was always very active. I was in sports. Did many sports. My main sport was swimming, so I was in a swimsuit. I was in tennis. I was a runner. I played a little bit of soccer.
Right.
I'm not very good. Very scared of a soccer ball, actually. SB's amazing. She's an amazing soccer player.
Oh, thank you.
But I can't remember exactly the situation. But when I was age 13, I was told that I was fat. And I was not fat.
But like a peer? Like someone at your school
yes,
or a coach?
Somebody at my school.
Okay.
I believe, from what I can remember, it was one of my friends said that somebody else said that I was fat.
Oh my goodness.
And I mean, I had an athletic build.
Yeah.
I was not, looking back on it, I was not fat. But the dilemma was I went to a private school and I had to wear uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
And you can argue that uniforms are great, you know, just because everybody's on an equal level. But what happened was I was comparing myself to others, like what I thought the skinny girls. you know, yeah, were.
The typical, what society wants you to believe is like the right body type.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And since everybody was in the same uniform, you know, there were other girls that looked skinnier in that uniform.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, I had a more athletic build.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to hide it. I wore jackets, and sweaters, like things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it never, nobody understood that. Like nobody understood why I didn't want to wear a uniform.
Hmm. Were you ever able to say it out loud? Like, hey, this is why I don't like it?
No.
Do you ever?
Okay. I just said I didn't want to wear it.
Okay.
So, and I would, at school, like I would untuck my shirt, you know, and the teachers would call me about it, you know?
Yeah.
So that was very, very hard. Now, I remember age 13, I was sitting in PE class, and so we were learning about nutrition. But of course, you know, they only have little experience in nutrition.
Yeah.
And so there was this app, and it was called Fugicate. And I don't know if it's still around, but basically what it was is it would give a food grade. So like, let's say an apple was A+. Or like a bag of chips was grade D. I decided.
So it's like a grading scale.
It's a grading scale.
Interesting. Okay.
And you can also count your calories on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like at all the ingredients. And so I was so obsessed with that app.
Okay. So this was your first time being introduced to like macro counting or anything of that nature.
Okay. By age 13.
Jesus.
And I wouldn't eat anything below a B.
Like, you just refused.
I refused. I thought that was so bad for me. Like, that was going to kill me. It was going to make me fat. You know, I'm on a goal to be skinny. Okay. I wanted people to like me. And I feel like that was a big thing. It was body image.
Yeah.
I had friends in high school, but like, I wasn't one of the popular girls.
Okay.
You know? And so I just wanted to be like in that group. I mean, naturally, like, you know.
So it was almost, you went on this journey towards becoming skinny because you wanted to look like the people that you wanted to be friends with.
Yes.
Okay, I see. That's so, I'm trying to wrap my head around the idea of you counting your macros at the age of 13. I counted my macros for the first time last year.
Yes.
And I'm 24. So 23 was the first time. So to be introduced to something so like, honestly, so fragile, because if you don't understand it all the way, that can go south, as we'll see probably really quickly.
But here's what was going on. I wasn't actually counting my macros. I was counting my calories.
Just your calories.
So I wasn't getting adequate protein, carbohydrates, nothing.
Okay.
And so I decided I was going to restrict myself around less than 1,000 calories. It ended up being 600 to 800 calories a day.
Okay, so when you came to this decision, how did you get that number? Did you like read it somewhere or did you Google it? How did you come up with like 1,000 or less is going to be my number?
I think I kind of knew like 1,500 was like the recommendation, but I was like, I'm not going to listen to that. I'm going to eat less because less is better if that's going to make me skinny.
Because you wanted to reach skinniness, quote unquote skinniness, as fast as possible.
As fast as possible.
Okay, I see. Okay, continue.
So I'll tell you what, kind of like what my day looked like in the way of eating. So like, I would still eat. I knew that I had to have some kind of nourishment to be alive.
Right.
And I consciously knew what I was doing. I knew I had to eat, but I thought as little as possible. And so I would start off my day with oatmeal, but I'm talking about like the packaged ones. And those are less than 200 calories.
Okay.
I maybe like had a granola bar, and my energy levels were just so low because of it. And then for lunch, I would have maybe a salad. I would have soups, low calorie soups, like clear broth.
And you were making these decisions still based off of like what was considered a grade B or A.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yes. Nothing below a D. I would have lots of fruits.
Mm-hmm.
Any low calorie snacks. And so what happened was I didn't have any energy at all throughout school. And I felt like I could have done better in school. I mean, I was good in school, but like I felt like I could have done so much better in everything, in sports, in school. if I had food, because that gives you energy.
Yeah.
And so what happened was I was also afraid of eating in front of others at school.
Okay. I actually know a lot of kids that go through this. I remember seeing this in other, actually, I know there was a period of time where I felt like some of my younger siblings went through this, where they would refuse to take like lunch to school.
Because it was uncool.
Yeah, it was uncool. And they would just sit around and talk to each other. And then they'd come home and be starving. And I'm like, how did you even survive your day?
I know. Like, how is that normal? It's not normal.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think I was afraid to eat in front of others because I didn't want to think, oh, she's eating that.
And judge
you.
And
she's also like fat and be judged.
Right.
So what would happen was I ended up eating in the bathrooms. I maybe ate in class, but I would have my lunchbox up to my face and I was eating whatever. So I just didn't want for people to see me. And this was only at school. It wasn't at home.
Okay.
It was only at school.
Okay.
But
even at home, you were still like making sure you were 1,000 or less.
Yes.
Or trying to. Okay. Got it.
And if we went out to eat, I would freak out. I would freak out if they didn't have any salads, anything like that, any soups. That's mainly what I also had when I ate out.
So as you're like, because obviously you're at the age where other people are around you. At school, other people are around you. At home, other people are around you. You know, different situations. As an athlete, you definitely had people around you.
Yeah.
Did anybody at any point like bring it up to you and kind of be like, hey, Lauren, what's going on? I've realized you haven't really been eating, or you haven't really been acting like yourself. I feel like you don't really have energy. Was there at any point where somebody like tried checking in on you?
No. I did have therapists growing up. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, high school bullies or whatever.
Okay.
I never told them. I don't think they nobody ever asked me what was going on.
Wow.
Never noticed my eating habits.
Do you remember your therapist at all ever asking like, hey, how's your appetite been?
No. Wow. Not my doctors. Okay. And actually, so what happened was I lost my period for 6 months.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up because also we have to take into consideration like you're in a very important developmental period of your life right now.
That's probably why I'm so short.
Good point. But okay, keep going.
So, yeah, I was running cross country at the time, I believe, I was playing tennis, and I lost my period for 6 months. I went in at 4 months. They were like, "Come back," because we don't know yet. And the gynecologist said, "Oh, this happens to girls that overexercise."
Right, I've heard that one before.
And now that I know like about nutrition, so it's called amenorrhea, and so that happens to girls, or not girls, yeah, girls, obviously, when they don't eat, when they're not nourishing their bodies. It's not just because of exercise.
Yeah.
You could exercise a bunch and then eat and then still have a period.
Yeah.
But what's smart about our bodies is our body knows that we can't have children. Our bodies can't provide to have children. It says, hey, your body's not in the right state of mind. You need to do something. You need to eat.
So it just kind of shuts it down for you.
It shuts it down for you. And it's probably a good thing, to be honest.
Right.
And I didn't know that. Like, until college, that's what was going on. And it's so sad that the gynecologist didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that are making me sad right now. The fact that nobody was, like, aware enough to ask you if anything was going on, to pay attention, just be like, okay, Lauren's not performing at the way that she needs to be, like as a coach, or one of your friends realizing that you made a transition of like eating to not eating, like that alone. But then also on top of that too, it sounds like you didn't have anybody around you to give you the education that you needed on nutrition. It's like a PE teacher just came into your life and was like, hey, by the way, here's a grade scale that makes no sense, by the way.
Yeah.
And here's a random number of 1,500 that's not taking into consideration you being an athlete. And then your PE teacher was like, okay, have a good life. And from there, you were kind of just left on your own to, I guess, do what you thought was the right thing to do, which was basically eat nothing.
And I would say my parents are really good. I feel like I was hiding it from them. So I just want to state that as well.
Yeah.
I also know that they're restricting, it wasn't because of I felt fat. It was also because it didn't feel good.
Yeah.
My stomach, I was still taking all the laxatives and everything. And that's, I was exercising a lot because I just didn't feel great.
Yeah.
And I'll say that I worked out for more than 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
I started the gym when I was about 12 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I had to work off the calories.
Was the introduction to the gym originally from you being an athlete, or is that an introduction you made yourself?
My parents, they were very active growing up. Okay. So they knew about all that stuff.
Kind of a lifestyle that you were taught then.
It was a lifestyle. Okay. And which it's not a bad one.
Yeah, that's a great lifestyle. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, so that I thought that I had to work off the calories. I was focused on the treadmill. How many calories did I burn off? If I didn't burn off more than 600, then mm-hmm. it was like I didn't do enough.
Mm-hmm.
So this lasted for about 3 years.
Okay.
And I think I was like, yeah, 16. And I actually remember the day this happened. So I was babysitting.
Okay.
And, you know, parents are not home. I looked in their pantry
mm-hmm.
and they had every single snack imaginable. And I was like, I will help myself to these cookies.
Right.
You know, these chips and so on. And it just turned to a thing. That's what I was doing. And I felt like my body was like making up for all those years.
Mm. So you went basically from the time that you're little to the age of 16
yes.
with just complete restriction. And now this is your first time in your brain, quote unquote, overeating.
Yes.
Okay.
And I didn't care. I was like, I've deprived myself from this so long. Like, I missed this.
Yeah.
And I would eat until I couldn't anymore, until I was sick to my stomach. And I already had stomach issues.
You mentioned chips. What other things were you, like, over-consuming consistently?
That's a good question. I feel like, you know, it was, like, a lot of processed foods. You know, like, chips, cookies, cake, literally anything. Because it yeah. happened at home, and it was, like, bread.
Mm.
Let's see.
Things that will add up very quickly.
Yes, things that add up very quickly. I would even, like, bake at home. Like, actually, like, make things for myself and then, like, eat it all.
Okay.
If that makes any
yeah.
sense.
Yeah.
It was literally just whatever I could get my hands on.
So, at this point, do you stop counting calories as well?
I did. Okay. So, I felt ashamed. Okay. And I didn't want to know how many calories I was eating.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
But I also, like, I'm still going through puberty, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was gaining a little bit of weight, but I was never fat.
Right.
And so what I would do is I would still restrict myself throughout the day. And then I would binge eat at night or whenever I was babysitting or pretty much when nobody was watching. And I hit it pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I would put in the trash can, pile some other trash on top of it, you know, so nobody could see it. At least from my knowledge.
Yeah.
And I would also hide food. If there was anything that I really wanted, then I would hide it under my bed or in my closet.
Wow.
And I felt like that was mine, that I had to preserve it.
Yeah.
I was still exercising excessively. You know, to make up for those calories that I ate.
So that was like your justification then. You're like, oh, okay, I can eat whatever I want because I'm still staying active.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, I felt like I had to exercise. And I felt my worst at this time. Like, my stomach was just not taking it.
Mm-hmm.
I still went to the doctor. And what ended up happening was, is that I started taking about 6 pills of laxatives.
A day?
Yes.
Wow.
It ranged about 4 to 6, but yes. And obviously that was to get rid of everything in my body.
Yeah.
I felt like I didn't feel clean.
Mm.
I felt like I just wanted everything out of my system.
Yeah.
And I knew this. I knew exactly what I was doing.
Right.
And I started taking weight loss supplements. So, like, green tea extract, because that's meant to like for fat loss, okay. basically. I was taking like, you know, the skinny teas and things like that. They were so disgusting.
So what, okay, what age are you at this point?
I'm at like 16, 17.
So are you buying all this for yourself?
Yeah.
Like you're basically financially maintaining your ability to do this.
Yes. It was, yeah, I had a job at age 16.
Gotcha.
So okay. I started out as a swim instructor, actually became a swim coach.
Okay.
I'll get into that later.
But, were you ever a lifeguard?
I was lifeguard too.
I have to tell you, remind me to tell you a story about when I tried to be a lifeguard.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, continue.
No, it was a fun time. I loved it. But that was another thing. I was also in a swimsuit, so it's like very body conscious.
Mm, okay.
So now we're age 17, 18. I was still keeping up with all these habits, restricting myself throughout the day at school. I still wouldn't eat in front of anybody. And then I would eat after and whatever I could find. I didn't realize it until like 3 years ago. So I started losing hair at age 17, 18. And I have pictures and my hair is so short and actually the texture of my hair changed.
Wow.
And that is a sign of nutrition deficiencies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly, but that's what happens. And also brittle nails.
Yeah.
And I was still getting nutrients, but I guess I wasn't getting enough.
Or the right ones.
The right kind.
Because usually our body will start to deteriorate in one form or another to let us know that we're missing like a specific thing. So it's like based off of whatever physical symptom you're experiencing, that could give you clues to be like, oh, okay, you don't have enough vitamin C in your system or whatever that might be.
Yeah.
So that's crazy.
That's good. You
like physically started to see your body change because of just what you were putting your body through.
Yeah. I didn't know what was going on. I was very self-conscious about that. But now my hair is back to normal, by the way.
Yay.
So it's very long. But basically, like, I had no fullness cues. Like, I didn't know when I was full. By the time I was like, I couldn't eat anymore, my stomach hurt really bad. And I was nauseous.
So your body, like, lost the ability to even tell you when you were full, when you were not full, when you were hungry, when you weren't hungry.
Yes.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. And I had like different cravings for things and I just didn't know what to do. I was very, very full. And so that was all that stuff.
Okay.
Now by age 20, so I stopped working out completely just because of my job. Mm-hmm. So I was swim coaching a lot. And my good friend at Lifetime that I was working with, so he was like, hey, I'm going to start lifting weights and I'm actually starting the keto diet.
Okay.
Now I'm going to say I don't promote any diet. I think whatever diet works for you is the best diet.
Right.
And I can get into that. But so he wanted to lose weight. He had type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to do that too.
Okay.
And so.
Look at you being a supportive friend.
He's supporting me. So he taught me everything about powerlifting and I was like, this is cool.
Right.
Like I feel really strong.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, I wouldn't say I had an athletic build
mm-hmm.
and I was like, this is what my body like can do. Like I'm made for this.
Yeah.
Like to lift
heavy
weights. It
felt natural for you to kind of transition into weight training.
Yes. And so he educated me on the keto diet, and so I started that with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very bad at it. I was not doing it right.
Right.
But what happened was I was more conscious of what I was eating.
Beyond just calories at this point.
Yes. Okay. So I was started counting like my carbs and everything.
Mm.
So the keto diet, I'll just say for the viewers, is that basically you're eating very low carb and very high fat. And so what the belief is that you will burn off fat faster because you're not having carbs.
Okay.
That's a whole debate, by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
I'm not going to unload that part. But so I really didn't lose any much weight.
Mm-hmm.
But I was eating like a lot of ground beef. I was eating a lot of broccoli, you know, some vegetables and some fruits, So I was like more conscious about what I was eating.
It sounds like you started having like a cleaner palate.
Yes.
As well.
And I stuck on this track for like a whole year.
Wow.
And I eventually fell off of it.
Right.
As anybody would with a fat diet.
Yeah.
And by the way, my friend, he lost about 40 pounds and got rid of his type 2 diabetes. It was amazing for him.
That's awesome.
So very proud of him.
Very successful nutrition story.
Yes.
We need to get him on the podcast.
I know.
Next.
I don't talk to him anymore, but yeah, I'd like to see where he's at. But then I started like feeling hunger again. I started feeling fullness again. It was like my hunger hormones were coming back to me. And eventually like this light clicked and I was like, I can stop eating. Like I know when I'm hungry and when I'm full now. And so I started learning about nutrition. I started taking like nutrition classes at this time at my college. And I learned about like a balanced diet and everything. And I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be eating. And so I started eating healthy. I was doing my research and I have my cues back. It was amazing. So I naturally just came out of it.
That's really cool. So you would say the first time you were taught how to eat a proper quote unquote diet would be when you were 21?
I was 21.
2021.
Yes.
That's late in the game.
Yes. Late in the game. And, you know, honestly, like, there's points where I still struggle. And I would say that I am still recovering. It's a process. Like, I just have to learn to manage it. You know, after, like, I still struggle with, like, body dysmorphia and, like, body image. And I feel like that's kind of normal. I feel like everybody a little bit struggles with
that. Yeah, I mean, everybody's got their insecurities at the end of the day.
It's normal to have insecurities is what I realized. I started developing a healthier relationship with exercise. I started realizing that I should just do it for fun, for my mental health.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't have to spend more than 2 hours in the gym.
Yeah.
And so I started properly fueling my body, eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And if I didn't want to eat, then I'm not going to eat. If I'm hungry, then I'm going to eat.
Yeah.
And just allowing my body to feel.
I love your story. I love how you like were able to take us through the restriction part of it, but then the opposite happened. Then you were over consuming, and then eventually you found your way towards like finding a way to rebalance yourself. And you really didn't have much support, I would say, in your journey, but you still figured out how to do it.
Yeah.
Which is so insane to me because, like, this is something that, I mean, it's not an easy task to just teach yourself something that you were supposed to be taught at a way younger age as well. So thank you, seriously, for sharing your story. Now, obviously, that's not where your story ends because now you're in school because you hinted at it a little bit. So you took your first nutrition class when you were 20.
Yes.
So was that considered a freshman, sophomore college?
I was in college for like 6 years, 7 years.
Okay.
But I was at a community college. And so I started taking nutrition classes there.
Okay.
And honestly, like, through my teenage years, like, I was interested in becoming a dietitian, but because I wanted to learn the secret about losing weight.
Yeah. You wanted that for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
But now
it's different.
Now it's different because you are in school. You're a year away from being a registered dietitian. So how the hell did you get there? What was that process like?
Oh, gosh. I realized how nourishing, you know, just food is that it's very much healing. I also left out a very important part of the story.
Okay.
To go back, and then I will. So I actually got off the laxatives.
Oh, yeah. I guess we didn't. When did that happen?
I don't even think I told you this.
So because you were pretty bad about that piece of it. You basically were, what's that word? Misusing.
Yes.
You were misusing laxatives from the age of, that started 16-ish? When you started binge eating?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's when I started.
When were you able to kind of reel that back in?
So I had heard about it, but actually this girl that I was a swim coach with, so she was using digestive enzymes. And I was like, I got to get off these laxatives because it's just not good.
Yeah.
As you can imagine, it might be. And so I started using them. And I take normal amount, by the way. And I just noticed an instant difference. Like, I have no bloating anymore.
Yeah.
I'm pretty regular. Like, the doctors did not tell me this. The doctor said, there is nothing else we can do for your stomach.
Mm.
And this was just a supplement I tried. I don't push supplements onto anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But this one in particular, if anybody struggles with that, then that's what I would recommend. And with digestive enzymes, the pancreas naturally produces it. So I've done my research. There's no negative side effects with it. And that's what I plan to do. Because this is the best I've ever felt in my whole life.
Yeah. I really like that you said that you did your own research. It sounds like that was kind of your saving grace, was education.
It was.
So going back to the education, so yes. Connection to now, how did you end up, I guess, committing to deciding that being a dietitian was like your passion for a career?
Again, I wanted to teach people how nutrition has helped me.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, all those things are just not normal. That, you know, food is not the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
That we are supposed to be, you know, just living life. And I want to teach, like, teenage girls, like, this is not okay. Like, you need to be happy within your own body.
Yeah. Basically, you want to be for somebody what other people were not able to be for you.
Yes.
Mm.
So, I want to show people the power of nutrition.
Yeah. I love that.
And just how healing it is.
Yeah. And so, you are a year away.
I am. So, I am in the process of getting my master's. Okay. So, I'm currently in my internship right now. And it's been actually very good for me. I've been at an eating disorder clinic for my eating.
Surprise.
Yes, for my internship, because I did like kind of want to see, you know, like what it's about, like other people, like, you know, their stories and just, you know, what the dietitians recommend and the therapists recommend.
Mm-hmm.
So and I've learned so much.
Yeah. You feel like that experience on its own has given you even more tools to be able to manage your own?
I think so.
Experience?
I've learned about like different things, like for moderation, you know, stress relieving techniques.
Into my field. I love it. Okay. I do want you to share some of those things that you have learned, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So, like, obviously, you are in an environment where, you know, majority of the people within that facility are going to be struggling with the same concept of something, even though it looks different for everybody and there's many different types of eating disorders.
Yes.
But being in that shared space, I can imagine, is super powerful. So what are some of the things that you've been able to take away just by interning there?
So eating in moderation. So I learned about mindful eating, and it's just basically being aware of your own body, experiencing how different foods feel. Experiencing how they feel physically and emotionally. And I learned there's like different types of hunger. It's not just there's physical hunger, like there's also like emotional, social, like different types. So it's like it's okay to enjoy a dessert.
Hmm. What is social hunger? Social emotional hunger? Is like, well, okay, I get that one, but what's social?
I'm probably saying it wrong, but it's like, you know, it's okay, like Thanksgiving or Christmas, like to go out with your friends and like, you know, just have like a meal, you know.
Okay.
So I'm probably saying that wrong, but
like, no, that makes sense because food actually brings a lot of people together.
It does.
It'll be like, we haven't hung out in 2 years. Hey, you want to go get dinner? Perfect. Yes. Let's go get food.
So like there's different reasons for eating. And I feel like a lot of people at the eating disorder clinic, they're eating because, you know, just so they can stay alive. It's for their physical aspect.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it's okay to just enjoy food just because. And food is also there for our emotions as well. It can make us feel good.
Okay.
Feel
so
happy.
I love that. So basically you were able to, in a way, learn how to be more aware of what being hungry means.
Yes.
In different contexts.
Exactly.
Okay, then you hinted at stress. I'm interested in that one. What are some of the stress techniques that you learned?
So when you're eating, you can journal. You could make sure you're breathing. Just take moments and just relax. Going on walks is very helpful. That's something they do a lot. They just go outside. So they do like those little things. They do some yoga, and that's been very helpful for them.
Yeah.
So things like that. One thing that they teach and that I started using, it's a hunger scale. So basically you have a scale from 1 to 10, and this can be completely different for anybody.
Okay.
But like 1 is where you're starving. You could be shaky, you could be dizzy, you could be hangry.
Okay.
And that's like the point where you can't, you have to have food. You can't wait another moment.
Okay.
And then 10 is where you're extremely full.
And you just want to go to sleep.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I've definitely felt that one before.
Yeah. So like you're in so much pain and like you're nauseous. So the scale just, it's different for everybody, but that's been something that's been very helpful. And I think very helpful for them as well.
So is that something that you do like every day consistently?
That's what I started doing. Yes. And I think I was doing that before I even knew what it was. Like I just sat with my body, was aware with my body and just seeing like, how hungry am I? Am I full? I was also asking myself, like, am I still enjoying this food? That's a big thing to think about.
Yeah.
So if you're not enjoying it anymore, you're probably full.
Okay.
So
I like that. What about, like that. What about some tricks for moderation? Cause that is a huge one, is people overeat.
Yes.
Or like, well, I mean, I'm going to use myself for this. If you give me a bag of chips, it's over with.
Yes.
It is. It's over with. It's done. No such thing as being healthy. Like, I seriously have the ability to put down a bag of chips. But obviously, like, I know that's not the smartest decision.
Yeah.
But that can be really hard sometimes. It could be, like, especially depending on how I'm feeling. Like, if I'm sad or upset, I'm gonna go for it.
Yes.
But what are some tips for being able to be more aware of moderation?
That's a good one. I feel like, you know, especially in these days, a lot of people are like, you know, eating in front of a TV, being in my dorm. I was, you know, eating on my bed.
Yeah.
I'll be scrolling through TikTok or Reels and like, you know, while I'm eating. So I think you just need to be present in that moment because you're so focused on something else. You're not focusing on.
That's true.
You know, what's important, like your body and like the food. You're not present with it.
That's true, because I do really enjoy like snacking on chips when I'm doing something else, like watching a movie or watching TV. And then I just don't really, I'm not sitting there like necessarily being fully aware or conscious of like how much of it I'm eating or if I've eaten it to the point where I'm not really hungry anymore and I'm just eating it to eat it.
Yeah.
I'm not paying attention to those things. I'm just like, oh, there's chips in front of me. Cool. And then they just go down the drain. So, okay. I like that.
Yeah.
Those are all really great techniques. I did want to, I was writing some notes as you told your story, because there are some things that I kind of want to go back to a little bit, just because I feel like they're so important. I did want to talk about your athletic career and I guess kind of like the connection that you made between what was going on with yourself, the eating disorder, and kind of the things that you had to go through because you were a swimmer,
yes,
a high performing athlete, and in a situation where you were wearing not very much clothing. So like, you know, your body was out in the open, you know, enough for you to kind of double guess whether or not you felt like, oh, do I look good enough to be in this swimsuit? So that is something that a lot of athletes struggle with as far as like body dysmorphia, lack of confidence, feeling discomfort within our own bodies. And you mentioned that you had an athletic build. I want to bring this back specifically because this is actually something that even I experienced, where I would look at like my other teammates, or I would look at, you know, some of the athletes that were being shown on like the TV around Olympic times, or anything like that, right? People that maybe I looked up to that were athletes. And I always felt like I just did not ever look like them, or I didn't look close enough to them that that meant I was not going to be a successful athlete. I wanted to bring that back. How did you specifically break that mentality? Like, how did you pull yourself out of that? What do you do now to accept your quote unquote athletic build?
That's a good one. I honestly feel like weightlifting helped a lot. I realized that my body can do so many things, and it has done so many things for me. You know, I feel like our body has a history. Like, you know, it has to do with genetics. My body, I'm never going to be skinny. And like, I have to accept that.
Yeah.
And that's completely fine. And beauty is just shown in different ways. You know, it's not natural to be completely skin and bones, by the way. It's not natural to have a six pack. And like, you take a look around at people and they don't have that, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And the girls at the gym, you know, they have a little stomach. I have a little, you know, a little pooch.
Right.
But, you know, that's what's healthy.
Yeah. I'm going to make a connection to something else that you said.
Yes.
And that was, you brought up like your PE teacher was basically trying to give you information that, was it a boy or a girl? He, she? I
believe it was a girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
That she was essentially required to teach you. But even though she was required to teach you it, she wasn't credentialed.
No.
To teach you it, right? The connection I'm going to make between that experience and your athletic experience. Coaches also don't receive actual proper education. Unless they go out of their way to do it. Like, they're not certified dietitians. Like, they're not certified nutritionists, right? And so a lot of coaches will be like, eat healthy, eat your veggies, or go have a high protein meal. But I don't really know that they understand how to actually like relay that information. And also they're not taking into consideration like every athlete's body is still going to be different.
Yes.
And I think that that itself can cause a lot of, I guess, misinformation within the athletic community when it comes to like, what does a healthy diet actually look like? So for an athlete that is attempting to gain nutritional advice or nutritional education, where would you suggest that they start? Do you have like a place where you feel like would be most beneficial to them?
So I'm actually a certified sports nutrition coach. That's different from a registered dietitian.
Okay.
I did get my credentials online, but I can make that advice. So I don't know about a place that I would recommend, but I would recommend for them to see some kind of dietitian, a sports dietitian in particular. I would make sure that they're getting plenty of carbs. Different athletes need different things for different sports. It really just depends on like if you're an endurance athlete, if you're a strength athlete, they're going to need different things. So like a strength athlete, they're going to require more protein. Endurance athletes are going to have more carbs. It's important to fuel your body for those activities.
Yeah.
And to make sure you're getting plenty of nutrients, the right nutrients, meats for protein, fruits, vegetables, and starches. And it's okay to have, you know, of course, like a little dessert.
Right.
And things like that. But, you know, just making sure you're fueling it for activities and electrolytes as well, because you're losing that in sweat.
That's true. So the best thing to do would be, if I do have questions as an athlete, is to find another professional, not just like
go to your coach.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
I had another connection that I did want to make. If, let's say, I am a coach or a family member or a friend, and I start to recognize that another person in my circle, another friend or another family member or one of my players as a coach, I start to realize that maybe their eating habits aren't healthy, or I don't see them as being healthy. What is like one of the first steps that I can take towards like checking in on them? Like, is there like a right way to ask about certain things like that?
I think so. I don't think you should ask them right away, like, why are you not eating? Why are you eating this much? Because you're just pointing out, you know, the thing that they're doing, and like, you know, they don't feel good about it. Like, it's a very embarrassing question.
Okay.
So I think that also goes into a deeper level. It's not just about the eating disorder or disordered eating. You know, it could just be what's going on in life. And I think you should Get to the root of the problem. Ask them what's going on with them, what's going on in their life.
Mm.
And then, you know, get them to open up, get them to trust you and to talk to you. And, you know, they may mention why they're not eating, but, you know, it just goes to a deeper level.
Yeah. Basically trying to get more information about the context around the situation, not just asking directly about the situation.
Yes.
Okay. I like that. I wanted to ask you that because there are situations where we may recognize that somebody's like clearly struggling with something, but we don't always know how to ask or how to like support that person. And then we just sit in silence. And that's like the worst thing to do.
That's a really tough question because I wouldn't want to be asked about my eating habits. Like, why am I not eating? But I think, you know, if it does get to a dangerous level and they're not eating, then maybe.
You do have to be more direct in that situation.
Okay. If they're at harm to their self, basically.
I like that. Another thing that I did want to bring up, you were mentioning that you dealt with or struggled with like comparison, and being a girl is hard. I very much enjoyed that you said that. And that's something that I would say has been one of my biggest weaknesses is comparing myself. That was my biggest weakness as an athlete, comparing myself to other teammates and things of that nature. But even now, like I do have to like be very conscious about making sure that I don't fall into that loop. What is your recommendation for not falling to comparison when it comes to like our own body image?
You know, I feel like everybody is different. Mm-hmm. You know, taking yourself away from social media. I feel like social media has so much to do with it.
Yeah,
and just realizing that those are not, you know, that's not normal. Like there's a lot of editing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to tell yourself, you know, give yourself like affirmations, basically. Like,
I like that.
You are not defined by how you look. So I'm going to give myself one. I am smart. I am strong. I am hardworking. I am a good friend. I am a good lover. You know, things like that. And I think through that, you can develop self-confidence. You know, you could point out to yourself, oh, my hair looks really pretty today. My makeup looks good. My outfit is really cute. You know, things like that.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Maybe you should be thinking about going to school to be a therapist next. No. But yeah, seriously. I mean, that's such a big one. And I do agree that social media can play such a huge role in that because we tend to look at social media as if everything that we see on there is true or real. And I'm like, that's just not the case.
No.
Again, misinformation, right?
Misinformation.
Being uneducated. Speaking of being uneducated, let's say that I am a person who is brand new to this, brand new to trying to quote unquote eat healthier. And I really want to just try to have a healthier relationship with food for whatever reason. Where should I start? What's a good starting point for me?
I think you should understand the importance of every nutritional component. So like the importance of carbs, fats, proteins, fruits and vegetables, dairy, all of that. And it doesn't have to be completely scientific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like carbs are like a fuel. It's energy. Protein to build muscle. Fat, it helps with absorbing different vitamins, like things like that. It's important for insulation. So just a very basic level of understanding, because you have to have all of those or else you're not going to be healthy.
Yeah. I just thought of a good like metaphor almost. Something that always irritates me is people will drive the same car every single day and they won't know what type of oil their car uses. They don't know how to change a tire if something happens. They don't know that you need wiper fluid, right?
Yes.
Especially around the time that it gets cold. Like people don't know these things, but they use that car every single day and rely on it to do the job of getting them from point A to point B. In a way, I think that we kind of approach our bodies like that too. It's like, I don't necessarily know how my body works all the way. I don't really know what this does for my body or why I need it, but I'm just going to go every day just expecting my body to do what I need it to do. So in a way, you're saying like, rather than do that, start by understanding what the heck my body needs and why it needs it.
Yes.
I like that. I like that a lot. I do feel like I need to make sure that there's nothing else that you feel like is absolutely necessary for the listeners to know, whether it's in relation to your story, or an educational tidbit that you want people to know before we kind of close out.
Yeah. I am very happy with myself. I am proud of my journey. Mm-hmm. I did want for people to know this story because I do want to help people.
Yeah.
And I feel like doing this podcast was very therapeutic for me.
Good.
And I did have some statistics. So actually, something I found out is that most people don't get diagnosed with an eating disorder until 10 years later.
Wow. Which is basically your experience.
Basically my experience. It was about 10 years.
That's insane.
Yes.
Which is why it's so important that we are aware enough and educate ourselves enough to understand if something is going on.
Yes. But the other thing is that 60% of eating disorders, they will come out of it.
So there's hope at the end of the tunnel.
There is hope at the end of the tunnel.
I think that's a perfect way to end. Yes. Absolutely perfect way.
I don't think any of these behaviors are normal. They are not normal. Mm-hmm. If anybody, you know, struggles with these, you know, I suggest to go see somebody. You know, I wish I had that. I wish I did have somebody to be there for me.
Yeah.
And I hope to be that for somebody.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have insecurities, and just love your body for what it does. It's amazing. Our bodies are amazing.
Yeah. At the end of the day, the worst thing anybody can do is sit in silence.
Yes.
That never has a good conclusion. Never. So, to end on a fluffy note, what is your favorite cheat meal? Speaking of moderation and balance, because Lauren does not just eat healthy food all the time.
No.
So what is your favorite cheat meal?
Oh gosh, I don't have a cheat meal. I don't believe in cheat meals because I believe you should enjoy foods all
the time.
Man,
see what you're already.
And so yesterday,
my bad.
Yesterday, so it was my birthday this weekend. And
happy birthday.
I got a free cheesecake from Cheesecake Factory. And I had, it was the pumpkin pecan cheesecake. And I love pumpkin stuff. And I was like, I'm going to allow myself to have this because it's pumpkin season.
Yes.
And it was delicious. I didn't have the full thing, but I hope to have it tonight. But it was so good.
Oh, now, I don't like cake. But cheesecake is the one exception. And Cheesecake Factory, man, the amount of times that I've gone there just for cheesecake, not actually food, I will just go and pick up a couple slices of cheesecake and call it. So, well, thank you, Lauren, for just hopping on the podcast with me, for being vulnerable and telling your story. I know, obviously, as I said at the beginning, like this was not an easy task and it took us a couple times. But yeah, I think today is proof that like this story is very powerful. So thank you. I feel honored that I was able to share this space with you and be kind of the source of you feeling comfortable enough to tell your story. So seriously, thank you.
Thank you.
And to all of my listeners, thank you for spending some time with me today as we entangled ourselves in the mental world of eating disorders, nutrition, and Lauren's life challenges. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to share and subscribe. Catch the next episode next Friday. And as always, our goal is to spread awareness on the importance of mental health as it relates to every person. No matter who you are or what you do, there's not a single person that goes unaffected by mental health. Don't forget, you are mentally entangled in every single aspect of your life. See you next time.